Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level.
Hello, welcome to another edition of C-Squared Podcast. This is your host, Curtis, with my co-host, Aaliyah. And we are here today with Justin Roth from the band Workhearse. He's done a lot in the music industry other than just be in Workhearse, but that is his main thing. He is signed to Metal Blade Records / Blacklight Media, and he's also released albums on Spart Records. And there's another one that I worked with that I'm totally blanking on, but he did release on a couple labels. But anyways, Justin, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. So we're going to start it off with Aaliyah, and she's going to get the ceremonies begun, I guess.
Well, I think maybe let's start with the fact that you guys are preparing a new album right now. You're in progress. And I would assume that something that kind of goes along with that is a social media campaign preparing for the release. And I know a lot of people, especially around this time of year, the weather's changing, season's changing. There's a lot of seasonal affective disorder. You know, people struggle with energy levels and maybe suffering social media burnout for other reasons as well. So maybe can we delve into that topic a little bit? What's your take on how to prevent social media burnout?
Oh man. Yeah. I mean, we just had an election yesterday, so perfect timing to, I think a lot of people have either been, I'm sure you guys have probably noticed this, but a lot of people are deactivating their accounts right now. And, I think a lot of people unfollowing a lot of people, you know, so Yeah, I think you have to limit your exposure to it. I know a lot of people that I'm friends with anyway, I'm jealous of these people. Unfortunately, like being a musician and having an active project, you're kind of forced to be on there a lot. But a lot of people that are experiencing the fatigue, they're just deleting the app. So like they're using it when they're on their computer only and they're not on their phone, so that, you know, you kind of detach from it a little bit.
Makes sense.
I know. It's exhausting when it's right in front of you all day. And I mean, I find myself like I'm so habitual about it that like, if I'm on the second screen, like I'll open Airbnb because it's in the same spot as Facebook, you know, like I open that Airbnb app accidentally like 5 times a day because my muscle memory, like I'm on Facebook so much that I just, you know, I just instinctually hit that button, I guess. But I think it's just limiting the usage of it, really.
Yeah, and I think it is kind of this combination of addiction and it's an addiction to something that's bad for us, and it's exhausting as well at the same time. Like I find myself easily getting distracted when I'm working on other important things, and I'm like, oh, I just feel mentally exhausted. I'm just going to check my feeds and scroll through mindlessly. Like, and it doesn't help me. It's not inspiring. It's nothing beneficial. And it just aids in the burnout. And of course, also the consistent posting schedule that a lot of, and we've even pushed people or encouraged people, I should say, on our podcast to post consistently because it is valuable in a certain way. But I guess we have to figure out a way to balance that, right?
It's very tough. There's something to be said for frequency. I think you have to stay consistent. If just the way the algorithms work on Facebook, if you don't post for a while and then you make a post, nobody's going to see it. Yeah. Like they reward you for frequency. So like, if you want to show up in the news feeds of the people who follow your page, you have to be like an every other day or every, you know, every 3 days kind of poster, which becomes hard. It actually becomes kind of a full-time job to curate all of that content. You have to find the stuff to post when you're in a slow time, especially, which, you know, during COVID, you know, most of us weren't doing shit, and just trying to invent things to talk about is extremely exhausting. You know, it's like you're trying to make your life seem interesting, which I think is actually one of the larger problems with social media is nothing's honest. You're trying to look at me, look how cool this shit is, look how awesome everything is, and you're posting it in your fucking underwear eating Doritos on the couch, you know, like your life's not glamorous, but nobody wants to see you eating Doritos on your couch, you know. So
I don't know, that might be a new merch item for you, dude.
It could be,
because
I love Doritos.
But and, you know, you see what I'm saying though. It's like that constant pressure to put interesting content into the world, and so
yeah,
it's good. Like one of the things that I do, and I think everybody should do this, if you're in a band and you know you're going to be up against this, I'm very good about sorting the photo albums in my phone. So like I've got like bigger shows that we've played where there was good photography, they will have their own photo album. So like
smart.
I can scroll backwards and it's like, well, I need to make a bullshit post today. I need to fill some space. I need to throw some more crap on the Facebook server. So I know that I can scroll backwards and grab, you know, like a good photo of somebody and just write a caption and say, you know, throw back to the time we did this, or, you know, who misses live shows, or, you know, whatever it is. But yeah, it is, it's very exhausting. And it at times even demoralizing, you know, you don't want to do it. You don't have the energy to do it. You know, you have to do it. In the case of, you know, signed bands or somebody who's in an album cycle, like you're obligated to do it. And yeah, if you don't do it, you get yelled at by somebody. So
yeah,
it's a lot of work, and it obviously, you know, you don't get paid for it. It's kind of like I would say it's like a 20 hour a week job that you, you know, that you don't get paid for.
And I want to point out one thing too, is that Justin is a marketer as his day job. So if he's getting burnt out doing this, you know, most people are.
I don't know if that makes it better or worse though. You know, it's like I stare at a screen all day. Like the last thing I want to do is like stare at a screen some more, you know? So
true. Good point.
Hard to say, but there is advantages. So like if you have a guy, I feel like every band has like a point person, you know, guy, girl, I shouldn't say guy, but like every band has like the person who's kind of like the poster or the guy, you know, who makes the content, makes the flyers, edits the whatever, you know, edits the crap that goes out into the world. It would benefit everybody to have someone in their band learn how to use like just basic design software and learn how to use things like Squarespace and Photoshop and, you know, being fluent in some of that stuff and understanding how to, you know, make like branded elements and keep your stuff consistent across all your mediums is like very, very important. So
one thing I wanted you to demystify, it's on topic, but sort of off topic at the same time, is a lot of people seem to think that once you get signed, someone is going to take over your social media for you.
I don't know if they will or not. You know, I think there are definitely certain bands of much, much larger stature than ours, of course, that have social media people.
Mm-hmm.
I have been the social media person for bands that I've worked for in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it's just like a shared account where, I mean, like I think you have permission to use our account. Still.
I do.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of times it sort of just becomes like a shared thing, but, I can tell you, you know, for a fact that, you know, James Hetfield's not posted on their fucking Facebook account, you know, but, most of the bands the size of ours, or even, you know, a little bigger, a little smaller, you've got to pull your own weight. I don't think they're just going to magically take over your stuff and take the workload off of you, because that means they've got to pay someone else to do it.
Yeah. No, that's a good point.
And why pay for labor when you can get it for free?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the whole music business in a nutshell right there. So
exactly. So I just wanted to talk about, for get back to the main part of the subject here, about feeling drained. So just to clarify, so you're talking about the viewing of the content feeling drained, or you're feeling like the posting of the content is, or both?
It kind of goes hand in hand. Yeah, it's just the being on Facebook thing, or Instagram, or, you know, TikTok, God forbid, whatever it is, whatever you're using. I just think it's not even so much like the doing it part. That's a job, that's work. You know, if you've got a good work ethic, if you understand that like it's a means to an end,
yeah,
you can motivate yourself to do it.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't necessarily get the feedback you want, and that sucks. Or yeah, you know, sometimes you put a post out in the world and it's misconstrued and it blows up in your face and you're in damage control, and that's never fun. You know, it's, I mean, there's just a plethora of things that go with it. You kind of have to like be very good at moderating yourself and kind of looking at things from all angles before you send it out into the world. But and then just the viewing it, and inevitably you're a musician, so you're going to compare your account and your results to you know, other people's accounts and results. And yeah, you know, it's just it's a rat race, man. It's very tiring.
So, okay. So for either of you guys, cause I don't know, like how do you stop feeling so drained and get yourself motivated then? I mean, you guys both post. I think Aaliyah does a little bit more than you do on Instagram, but I mean, you do more on Facebook, I think, than the three of us combined.
Yeah.
So how do you, granted, a lot of it's on your personal page, but so how do you kind of get yourself motivated to post then?
I'll let her take that one first.
Ooh.
I'm hoping to learn something, Curtis.
Oh, fair.
Dude, I don't even, I don't post unless I have something worth sharing anymore. And so I don't know if I'm really the best example. We just had a show.
Yep.
So of course I had a few things that I could post about the show. There was some video, there's some photos. So I had a season of wealth of content, as it were.
Sure.
But there wasn't that much, and it's just like, yeah, I don't really motivate myself externally to post. Today I did post, I got to post something in my stories at least.
Mm-hmm.
Literally totally unrelated to music. Just, this is what I did this morning, you know? I don't think I'm necessarily the best example because I still struggle with that. I don't know what my brand is sometimes. And like, there are some people out there who have like a really defined brand. And they're doing it and they seem like they're loving it. You know, they've got their outfit of the day. They've got their inspirational quote of the day or whatever. And it's like, you do you, but I'm not out here trying to throw my, you know, words out to people that aren't even going to read them most of the time.
Fair. Yeah.
That's weird. Cause to me, you seem like you're everywhere all the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I comment on people's stuff and I react to people's stuff a lot. And I think that's more valuable in a way. So yeah, that's another thing you can do, I guess. Maybe
that might be the lesson.
Maybe that's a point. Maybe that's a point.
That might be the lesson, though, because now that you mention it, it is a lot of commenting and liking that I see. Justin, so how about you with Facebook then?
Well, to touch on what she just said, there's some definite value in that, in commenting on other people's stuff. And I think the different platforms have kind of chiseled out distinct identities and kind of what they're good for, what they're useful for. Commenting on other people's stuff and resharing and doing kind of the networking thing, I think Twitter is a great tool for that.
Agreed.
I don't know that Twitter is going to gain you any followers as a band. I don't know that people on Twitter give two shits about heavy metal at all or music in general, but it is a good way to interact with product managers at Ernie Ball or, you know, whatever it is that you're, you know, guitar companies or people at your record label or whatever. I think Twitter is good for that. Instagram, I do think comments are very valued. I think that's kind of like the only thing on Instagram anybody cares about.
Yep.
Where Facebook, I think, is definitely more of like that, that round table sort of like open discussion kind of platform where, you know, one post can turn into 200 comments and it may be useful. It's normally a shit show, but
it's normally a Michael Jackson eating popcorn in the theater.
Yeah, exactly. As soon as it gets started. Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I motivate myself to do it so much as like, it's just become kind of like old hat. Like I just know that I need to do it. So I do it.
Yeah.
You know, the posting for my personal page is a lot different. Sometimes I'm just an old man screaming at a cloud. Sometimes, you know, it may be music related or maybe something cool. 9 out of 10 times, it's just some shit that, you know, I want to vent about or that's on my mind and my cat doesn't want to listen to it. You know, just, you know, I think that in and of itself, it's therapeutic, but it's dangerous. And I think that's where like the addiction kind of comes in. When you're given this platform and you have access to, you know, hundreds of people within seconds, you know, it's like, I don't know, you get sort of, you're kind of lost in having those conversations all the time. And they do tend to get a little long in the tooth. So I don't know. I don't know that there's a great answer to it. I think that, the main thing is whether you like it or you hate it. And yeah. I think most of us grow to hate it, even if you liked it at one point in time. You have to understand that it's an essential part of the job. Like it or not, it's out of sight, out of mind. And the second you stop posting for a while, and the second, especially, you know, from your band accounts or your project accounts, as soon as you go dark, it takes so long to get that momentum back. It takes so long to get back in that algorithm. So you just, we all hate doing it. And most of it is contrived nonsense to the 10th fucking degree. It's horrible.
Yep.
You have to do it. Like you just know that it's part of the job you signed up for.
I agree. And I think in one degree, it's probably worse for the women because they kind of feel like they have to keep up with an image, I would think. And Aaliyah, correct me if I'm wrong on that, but that would be my imagination, at least.
I mean, I think that applies for men too, though. True. I mean, men have to make sure, like, if you look at like the successful male Instagram influencers or musicians who do well on Instagram content, they are always posting flattering photos, well done photos. True. Like, there's just, I feel like there might be equal amount of pressure. It's fair. Instagram. It's an image based platform.
It is.
And so it's a lot of focus on that. On that.
Yeah. And I think that's it, back to like the different platforms having different personalities or different usage. I definitely agree with that on Instagram. Instagram is like 1000% at all times, best foot forward sort of.
Yeah.
It's all an illusion. It's all bullshit. We all know it's bullshit, but like it's, you're being judged on how well the photograph's taken, how well the lighting in the room is, you know? I think one thing that everybody should do is, you know, versus looking at it in a negative light and saying like, you know, why can't I be this person? Or you know, I know that it's very toxic for young people. They compare themselves to these influencers or to these people that, you know, literally have professionally touched up photos or like, you know, have a professional photographer following them around at all times.
Yeah.
Just look at those accounts and ask yourself like what you can take from them to make your own account better. Look at accounts that are curated very well.
Yeah.
One account that I really like, he was my rep at Positive Grid. He plays in a band called Teeth and some other bands, is Christopher Lemasters, Canadian dude, guitar player.
I'm going to see that band next month.
Oh, okay. Yeah, dude, killer band. He's a great guitar player, but he's fucking awesome at social media. Like his account looks good. His photos are fucking sick. Like dude must have a good camera or just an amazing eye. Everything is like color graded very specifically across all of his posts. Like they're very uniform. Yeah. Are you looking it up right now?
I'm trying to find him. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Dude, it looks good, man. And like, I look at that and that kind of kicks me in the ass and I go like, shit, man, I better like get my studio looking good. I better buy a couch to put back here and fucking get some lights, you know? So it's like, there are guys that are good at that. And because they're good at that, the way the industry has changed, it's funny. Like, you know, take Jackson Guitars as a good example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a guitar player, getting a Jackson endorsement back in the day meant like you were in a touring band and you ripped super hard. You know, you were a top level player. Now getting a Jackson endorsement means like you've got a really fucking good Instagram page and you post a lot of fucking playthrough videos, you know? So it's like, given the weird shift in the industry and what it means to, you know, be a musician or like a guitarist or whatever, I think it's definitely important to like pay attention to what the more successful guys are doing with their pages. So
I agree. What was his name again? I can only find the Teeth account.
Let me see what his name actually is on Instagram.
Sure.
Dude, we are Instagram and live right here. This is great.
Yeah. You brought him up as an example.
Yeah, we're literally stalking some dude's Instagram page while we're on
the air.
A podcast here.
Recording.
So it's Chris, Chris.
Okay.
Melasters. But it's Chris Lemasters.
Ah, I found him.
Yeah. But like, look how fucking good this dude's feed looks like as you scroll down.
Oh, yeah.
His guitar porn is insane. Like he takes amazing pictures of his instruments. Like it's even the pictures of him, like look at him looking all suave. I hope he's watching this. Like look at him with his sleeve all rolled up. Like look at my guns. You know,
I'll have to remember to tag him when we do the post.
The Lightroom work on his photos is great.
He's a rad dude. But yeah, I mean, I guess like there is pressure to like, you know, like I need to step my game up to like where his is, but like I don't see that as a negative. I see that as like it's good that somebody's giving you that inspiration, like curating a good account to like motivate me to get off my ass and do better.
100%. And I do want to point out something. Chris has 25.1k followers and his band only has 4,700.
Yeah, well, what does that tell you, man?
He's exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. We should probably go to the next topic, Aaliyah, because we've probably spent half of this on social.
We've definitely spent half of this on social media, yeah. So that's okay. But let's move on to the other aspect of your new album that you're working on. And I just want to know a little more insight on how the writing process now that you are, you know, I mean, how the writing process is writing an album for release on a somewhat major label versus when you're doing it for fun or for an independent band.
That's a good question. It's very different to me. I don't know if it's different to everybody, but I feel an immense amount of pressure for this album to do well that I didn't feel with the others. And I think the other guys in the band would probably agree that the others were for fun. Like the other ones, we wrote them. And so to circle back to the intro, it was Static Tension Recordings, Curtis. It was Kyle Stevens. But
sorry, I knew that.
Yeah. Yeah, but when we did that album, it was written as a demo. We gave it to Curtis. Curtis, being good at his job, he actually got us signed to our first indie label. And then so there was zero pressure. It was written as a demo. We recorded it in 4 days. The second album, we kind of just wrote as we went. We gigged those songs for quite a while, and one day we just had enough and smacked an album together, and it was good enough to get us signed to Svart. So like those were kind of like happen chance outcomes just because the music was good and people liked it. Like, I don't know. There was no pressure though. It was like, it was literally just, that was what we wrote and that's what it was. And I think that the approach with this one, the expectations are a lot higher. We've taken longer to write it. And just the knowing the sheer amount of eyes and knowing that ultimately we'll circle back to this in a second, but like knowing that it has to perform because of where it's going, it just changed the way that I approach some things. Song lengths, like the actual lengths of the songs are different. There's a lot more there's a lot more thought that goes into how is this going to play, you know, on Sirius XM, what is the commercial potential of this if the record label puts a push behind it and it ends up, you know, in certain places. So there's just a lot of consideration that goes into the writing and crafting of these songs that we never gave two shits about in the past.
So I want to touch on this for a brief second, because wouldn't that be considered selling out, Justin?
Absolutely, and I'm all for it, so... Hate me if you want. I don't care. I'm trying to get paid.
Fair. So now just to back that up a little bit. So, okay. So here's one question that I've actually had. And you should know this, I would think, since you've been signed to a fairly major label. When you got signed, the label was looking at you for your past output. So why would you then veer off into being more commercial after getting signed?
So here's the thing, and I think this is the number one thing. If young musicians listen to this can take away one thing, it's this. Record labels are not what people think they are. Record labels are banks, okay? Yeah. It's a bank. When they give you that album advance, you owe that album advance back, and you're paying it back out of your own royalties, not out of the total haul of whatever they bring in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they give you, you know, easy math, they give you $10,000, and let's say your cut of those album sales are $2. You're not paying it back at the $20 they sell the album for. You're paying it back at the $2 they owe you. So, good, you point. $10,000 divided by a measly $2, like you're going to be in debt for a long ass time paying these things back. Yeah. So, and that actually changed our approach to it a little bit too. Like we've spent a lot less money on this album than we spent on Eradication. We've been a little more frugal with studio budgets and some of the stuff we've done. I'm doing 90% of like the album work layout, all that sort of stuff, to so that we're not paying anyone for it, because we're just you don't, at the end of the year, you want to be a green line on that spreadsheet, not a red one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want your record label to be like, hell yeah, these guys have paid us back already, and now we can put a push behind them. You don't want them to be like, oh God, this band still owes us money. They're never going to pay us back, you know? Yep. So yep. I think that, you know, understanding that album advance is basically just a bank loan and you owe it back at very high interest. Like it changes your perspective. Now, as far as like changing the writing,
mm-hmm.
some of it was intentional, some of it was unintentional. Like I say, we did pay mindfulness to like songs not being 10 minutes long. You know, I mean, thrash metal is kind of historically, songs are pretty long. You know, Metallica songs are on the short side are 5.5 minutes long, and that's mm-hmm. where our songs have tend to clock in at that like 5.5 minute mark. But you have to understand that like SiriusXM or, you know, even some of these like curators for Spotify, like they're not going to allocate like a 5.5 minute window for an unknown band, you know, mm-hmm. like just because you've made it to Metal Blade, that doesn't mean shit. Like mm-hmm. getting to Metal Blade, all that means is that I got to the starting line. That's not the finish line. That's the starting line, you know? So, you know, just keeping that in mind, knowing that maybe they're going to give us a 3.5 minute window or a 4 minute window, like you got to get to the point, you know, you can't have the 9 minute intro that, you know, Metallica's afforded or some of these other bands are afforded. So that part was definitely, intentional and planned.
Fair.
You guys have heard the stuff. So, or some of it anyway, it some of it's a, it's kind of a departure from what we've done in the past, and some of it.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Oh right. Yeah,
yeah. Ooh, yeah. So, but some of it kind of picks up where we left off,
yeah.
And you know, we're not trying to like completely change what we do by any means, but like people have to understand too that last album was written for our first vocalist.
Mm-hmm.
So we had Tarek. And Blaine came in after those songs were actually halfway done being recorded and just recorded over top of whatever Tarek was doing. So we, you know, that album to him was just a total job. Like he didn't have any input. He didn't have enough time or anything to go in and change and make things his own. And with this one, with the writing being a little more collaborative and wanting to take advantage of, you know, having a guy who can sing and having a guy that understands melody and you know, timing and some of this other stuff, like it just made sense to open things up a little bit. And if that turns off some of the thrash metal purists, like that's fine. Like it's an unfortunate consequence, but I think that more people will be gained than lost, or at least that's, you know, that's what I'm hoping for.
That's a good point. I didn't even think about the vocalist change. It's just like, oh yeah, that makes total sense. Sorry, Ali, I think you were gonna say something.
No, I think that is the pattern I see with successful bands is, yes, they do lose fans that say, oh, you're not the band you used to be. You're not writing songs, the songs that I fell in love with. But overall, the gain is greater than the loss.
Yeah.
As far as numbers go. Now, it's just a matter of people prioritizing, choosing their priorities and not complaining that they can't have everything. You can't have your cake or eat your cake and have it too. So,
yeah. Well, I think with thrash metal in particular, like the fans are very fickle, and, you know, I mean, I love our fans. Thrash metal clearly been my favorite genre since I was a kid, but like if you deviate from the norm, they pull out the pitchforks.
Yep.
If you're a young band and you do the norm, then you're just a clone and they pull out the pitchfork. So it's like, how do you win? You know, it's like we were talking off air, it's the Greta Van Fleet thing where no band writes music like Led Zeppelin. You know, we've heard this complaint for the last 40 years, and then a band comes along and maybe they flew a little close to the sun, but like a band comes along and they play the exact music you've been saying you wanted for the last, you know, four decades. And now you bitch because it's too much of what you wanted, you know? So it's like, as a young band, it's a tightrope, you know? It's, we either play like that that fucking, that true to roots Bay Area thrash music, kind of what we've been doing, that it got us so far, but there's kind of a glass ceiling on that because fucking Testament and Exodus and all these dudes, they're never going to fucking retire. So you almost run into like a boomer job market scenario where, like, until these fucking guys go away, like, there's no room for another band at the top, nor are we going to like pass those guys by. You know, they're so established, the fan base is there. So it's like, if we want to carve out our own little piece of this market, and we want to be our own band and not spend the next 20 years being called a Testament clone, then like, we need to do something that's us.
Yeah.
And if our fans like it, then fuck yeah. And if they don't, we'll go listen to the first two albums.
Agreed. Aaliyah, did you have a follow-up to that?
Well, I guess I wanted to say that I think what it comes down to is doing what you it's like you said, you have to do something that's unique, but true to you. Like, you can't do it fake. Yeah. You know, and there's no reason to go out making the same music that everyone's already made, but just try to dig deep and find that part of you that makes your music expression authentic and unique. And yeah, I think that's what's important when it comes to standing out from other bands, without disrupting the norm too much or whatever. Just don't even be concerned about that, I guess.
Yeah, I think metal fans are very good at sniffing out a fraud. Like, if there's one positive that comes from all of the gatekeeping and all of the bullshit that, you know, that comes with the constant judgment from your peers, it's that they know what's authentic and they know what's not. So like, it's got to pass the sniff test for sure. You 100%. Know, and I think that like what we did, we didn't abandon the thrash metal thing whatsoever. I know we're talking about this album like it's already out, so people are probably listening to this going, Jesus Christ, like, what the fuck did they do to this album? But like, there's tons of thrash on it, tons. But there's also like, I played in hardcore bands for a decade. You know, I played in punk rock bands, you know, from being a kid to, you know, through late teens. And you know, there's other things that we're interested in that aren't just Testament, Metallica, whatever we've been compared to for the last, you know, handful of years. Like, we're growing as a band, and like, you can't expect a band to just write the same album over and over again.
Yeah.
And I think that with the kind of the downtime, the COVID stuff, one of the things that I spent most of my time doing was hanging out at the record store and just kind of like reconnecting with music of the past that I had lost, also finding new music and finding influences all over the place. And there's just so much more to music than playing, like, you know, alternate pick riffs in that Metallica like 0-1-3-5 box. Like, it just, I don't know, I just wanted to kind of be more well-rounded, you know. And I don't want to just be like viewed as a poor man's Eric Peterson for the rest of my life, I guess. I don't know.
Fair enough. So I think we have to wrap because it's been about 45 minutes now since we started. So
that's a long episode and a lot of information for people to digest.
Justin will have to come back once again.
Yes, definitely. So we can talk about tour buy-ons.
Yeah.
Yeah, my favorite.
Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. And yeah, hopefully we'll have you back soon to talk about other things.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. And as always, you know, thanks for having me on.
Of course. And everyone, until next time, make like a bull and throw those horns up.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C Squared.